Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loright. Well, today we'll open up the phone lines for most of the show. We'll talk about some of those major items in the news, and we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming Super Bowl. Pretty soon we'll take your phone calls and listen to your comments about some of the important things that are going on. First, one listener comment about yesterday's program. Yesterday we mentioned that Governor Ron DeSantis is moving toward promoting legislation in Tallahassee that would penalize social media companies that bar conservative candidates from appearing in social media. And that led to a discussion about whether or not conservatives have access to the media. And here's what one listener had to say.
I had a comment regarding the supposed censoring of conservative voices in the media and on social media. Almost all the conservative news and social media lie and promote conspiracy theories. Republicans are the party of irony. The bottom line is the South must change, and they are running scared.
There's a comment that came in after yesterday's program. This is 88.5 FM. You're always welcome to send an email comment into the studio here, and I'll try to read them all as they come in. You can send your comments to dj@wmnf.org. Let's start off with the Super Bowl this weekend in Tampa on Sunday. The Super Bowl is going to be played. It's historic because it's the first time that the bowl is played in the hometown of one of the contending teams. Pressure is mounting for the Super Bowl-bound Kansas City Chiefs to end the popular tradition of fans breaking into a war chant while making a chopping hand motion designed to mimic the Native American tomahawk, supposedly. A coalition of Native American groups has put up billboards in Kansas City to protest the tomahawk chop and the Chiefs' name. It's also planning a protest outside of Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, the site of Sunday's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Chiefs made some changes in the fall, barring headdresses and war paint, and making a subtle change to the chop, but advocates say that that wasn't enough. In West Tampa, and you may have driven by this already, but there is a huge, huge mural honoring Colin Kaepernick, the former quarterback who was really demonized in some quarters for kneeling during the national anthem. And we're going to listen to a story that our own Daniel Figueroa IV did yesterday about this new mural, giant mural in West Tampa, not too far from Tampa Stadium, honoring Colin Kaepernick. Let's listen to Daniel's story.
Chelsea Ramirez stands barely 5 feet tall, but now the 13-year-old Stuart Middle Magnet 7th grader's likeness, all 30 feet of it, will look over the West Tampa neighborhood she calls home. The 30-by-90-foot mural is a celebration of Kaepernick's work to fight police brutality and racism and to empower black and brown people. It features the 10-point tenet of his nonprofit Know Your Rights Camp.
The right to be free.
The right to be healthy.
The right to be brilliant.
The right to be safe.
The right to be loved.
The right to be courageous.
The right to be alive.
The right to be trusted.
The right to be educated.
The right to know your rights.
Created by New Orleans activist, artist, and educator Brandon B. Mike Odoms, the mural is called Change the World. It's the same punny name as Kaepernick's new signature Ben & Jerry's flavor and mimics the pint's artwork. Odoms also decorated the pint. Kaepernick is donating proceeds from the ice cream to his nonprofit. The work features the likenesses of Chelsea and two other Tampa children, along with Kaepernick's nieces and Kaepernick himself raising a fist. But it's a quote up top reading "The blueprint to our tomorrow is in our imagination" that carries the real message. During the unveiling, Odoms told Chelsea just that.
Y'all can rethink the structures that all us old folks are fighting and trying to change. Y'all have the ability to rethink it and re-see it, or to see it differently. Because y'all could be like, yo, this is whack. Why y'all even talking about this? And y'all could just rethink the whole thing with your imagination. And that's what this piece is about. It's about how in you all, in the youth, is the blueprint to tomorrow. You dig?
Yeah.
Odoms had some local help. Tampa-based muralist Eric Hornsby, also known as Artist Esh.
I want Esh.
And St. Pete artist Carlos Culbertson, who goes by Zulu Painter, also helped out. Esh lent some scaffolding supplies to the project, and both men helped paint the mural.
We might hit me up, and then I got in touch with a local painter, Zulu Painter 1. He's out of St. Petersburg, very, very talented artist, and he also came out and painted for 2 days on this wall as well.
The mural's location is significant. It might not be the most prominent spot in the city, but it's a spot where the message will get to the folks to whom it matters the most.
As being like Tampa's traditional black downtown on a black-owned building, I think here it's going to do a lot of good.
Kaepernick was all but ostracized from the NFL in 2016 when he began taking a knee during the national anthem as a way to protest systemic racism and police brutality. At the time, some criticized the move as unpatriotic, despite it being suggested to him by retired Green Beret Nate Boyer. Last year, the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, among others, sparked international protest and renewed vigor in the fight for racial equity. Awareness brought on by the summer's activism even garnered Kaepernick an apology from NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, who said the league should have listened earlier. The mural was funded by Ben & Jerry's, who will also be sponsoring a COVID-safe community drive-through Sunday where families can grab a meal, a pint, and some gift certificates to local businesses. Chelsea, a Honduran immigrant who passes the corner of Moses White Boulevard and Albany Street where the mural stands nearly every day, said she hopes people who see it come away with a message of hope and inclusion.
It doesn't matter like what skin color you are, where you came from, like what sex you are, female, male, that like we all have our own rights. We all are the same.
For WMNF News, I'm Daniel Figueroa IV in Tampa.
So that mural can be seen at Moses White Boulevard and Albany Street in West Tampa. That's 2113 West Main Street in Tampa. It's just a few blocks away from the NFL Experience and just a few blocks away from the Raymond James Stadium. And so if you want to comment about that, our phone number 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Every year, people's eyebrows are raised by the high cost of the Super Bowl tickets. And yesterday, I talked with Tampa Bay Times reporter Christopher Spada about the ticket prices this year and who's buying those very high-priced tickets. And here's my interview with Christopher Spada. Christopher, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Rob.
Let's go over the basics for just a second. What is a ticket, let's say in the nosebleed section, cost for this Sunday's game?
So the cheapest tickets as of around right now, upper level in the corner, you're looking at around $6,800 to $7,200 per ticket. But you can't buy only one. You have to buy at least two, and that has to do with the COVID restrictions. So you're on the hook for at least about $14,000.
And is there a service fee?
Yeah, the fees are, you know, unbelievable. Now, it kind of depends what site you're looking at. Some of them roll the fees into the price that you're looking at. Some of them hit you with the fees after you put the tickets in your cart. But, you know, you're talking about additional thousands of dollars in fees. So the price of a, you know, a $8,000 ticket can be like $12,000 after they hit you with the fees.
So that's in the upper sections in the corner. What if you try to get close to the 50-yard line or get down close to the field? How high up does it go?
Yeah, I've seen them as of yesterday as high as $36,000. And, you know, really, if you want to be down in the lower levels, I saw some that were in the end zone in the front row for over $35,000. That's about what you're looking at right now, $30,000-$35,000 to have a really good seat.
Now, my understanding is they're only going to let about 20,000 people in the stadium, fans in the stadium for the game, right?
Right. It's going to be 24,700 fans. 2,700 of those are people who are going to be in the luxury suites. 22,000 are people who bought tickets or got tickets some other way, including 7,500 healthcare workers who have received both doses of the vaccine, who the NFL distributed tickets to for free.
And when we talk about buying a ticket for $8,000 a piece, do you buy it from the NFL, or is this now on a secondary market?
Yeah, this is the way that the Super Bowl is really different from any other sporting event, because people don't understand Super Bowl tickets actually never go on sale to the general public at face value, ever. So from the very get-go, unless you're a season ticket holder for one of the two teams that's in the game, you're going to be buying tickets from a resale site. And that's why they're so much higher than the face value. The face value on tickets, the worst seats, the face value is, I think, $900 or so. So it's expensive, but it's nothing close to what they go for when people turn around and resell them. And the way it works is the NFL actually controls all the Super Bowl tickets. They divide up a certain amount that they give to each of the two teams to do what they want with. And what the teams will do is they'll sell a certain number of those to their season ticket holders. For instance, the Bucks this year held a lottery. And if you won the lottery, you have the right to buy a ticket at face value. So that's the only way you're going to get your hands on one of those $900 tickets ever. The teams also distribute them to sponsors, VIPs. The NFL hangs on to a certain amount of them, which they also give to sponsors and VIPs. And a certain number of those go to the NFL's, this company that's a ticket broker. It's the name of it's escaping me, but this ticket broker company, the NFL owns a piece of it, and basically those tickets are way marked up too, but some of those packages include airfare and fan experiences and stuff like that. So
a lot of good stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
So is there a law against ticket scalping? That is, that if the markup is so big on some of these tickets in the resale market, isn't there a law against scalping tickets?
You know, it's sort of a gray area, but that's mostly a misconception. These ticket sites are able to operate for resellers, and that's the way it all works now. It's pretty much they all sell through sites like StubHub, Vivid Seats, Ticketmaster, actually. Even if you're buying your tickets on Ticketmaster, you're not buying them at face value. Those are actually resale seats that are listed even on Ticketmaster. So a lot of people go to Ticketmaster thinking, oh, I'm buying them directly from the NFL or directly from the Buccaneers. That's not the case.
Hmm. All right. So are these prices that we're seeing this year at the Super Bowl appreciably higher than they were last year? I mean, or is this pretty much routine? Is this pretty much what you've got to expect for a ticket at the Super Bowl?
No, I mean, we were looking at the average ticket price for a ticket that was sold through one of the resale sites this week was at around $11,000. At this same point, same number of days out from the game last season, it was under $6,000. So we're definitely higher than normal. The prices are always insane. You know, even a $5,500 ticket is too much for me, but yeah. You know, it's more, and it's probably, it has to do with the scarcity. We think it probably has to do with the scarcity of the tickets, because Raymond James Stadium can hold 66,000 fans, and it's so limited that people are paying a premium. Now, usually the ticket prices for the Super Bowl generally drop, you know, Friday and Saturday right before the game, because people have to get rid of the ones they were holding on to see how much they were going to get for them. If you're brave enough to wait, you might see prices dip a little bit. But, you know, in the year when we're dealing with a pandemic, all bets are kind of off. So it's harder to predict.
So, Christopher, my imagination is that everybody that's at a Super Bowl game is some sort of fat cat who flew in on a private jet. And that, you know, to them, $8,000 or $16,000 or whatever they're spending on a ticket. That's chump change for them. That's petty cash. What did you find out in your reporting?
Yeah, so I thought the same thing. These must all be millionaires who are coming to the game that are willing to pay these prices. But, you know, I wrote a story that was by no means a scientific survey of everyone who bought tickets, but the people who I found, four different people who bought tickets, all had, you know, pretty normal, you know, good jobs, but middle-class jobs. One guy is a handyman from New Jersey who is a Bucks fan, who was getting ready to go out on his snowplow and plow a bunch of yards in order to pay back some of the nearly $20,000 he paid for tickets. Another guy was a tennis coach and a former teacher who paid $22,000 plus for his tickets and said, you know, it's not like I have a ton of money. This is like 40% of my annual salary after taxes, 40% of my take home. And that guy, he had to buy the two tickets and he doesn't have anyone else to go with him yet. So he's trying to sell the other one, or he said he's single. Maybe he'll meet a woman down in Tampa who wants to go to the Super Bowl with him. You know, if not, he's looking at if he doesn't sell it, he's looking at $23,000 for a trip to Tampa for one football game. He's coming from Michigan.
So it's not all fat cats, and some people are dipping into their savings to afford these high-priced tickets.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I heard from one guy in Chicago who said, I'm going into my 401k, you know, that's you pay some pretty high penalties when you take money out of there early. And I don't know. I don't know how old that guy was, but hopefully he's a long ways away from retirement, far enough from retirement that he'll be able to make some of that up by the time he retires.
Christopher, one last question. Where are you going to be on Sunday?
I'll be at the game. But, you know, I'm covering it as a journalist, so you know, it's not going to cost me anything.
That'll be great. Christopher Espada, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Christopher Espada, who writes for the Tampa Bay Times. He's written a couple of stories about the high price of tickets and also who's paying that high price of tickets. And I guess we'll have to wait to see how many private jets have flown into Tampa International Airport and parked there on the east side to see how many fat cats come into town for the Super Bowl. Well, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to the phones. Let's take Eric in Tampa. Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hey, good morning, Rob Laurie. This is Eric Pages. You're familiar with me. I give a call now you get into your shows. How you been?
I'm good. What would you like to say, Eric?
I was just kind of curious. I just heard on the NPR News just before your show. Well, I guess this is a question of ethics. It's a rhetorical question, so I guess it's good for your discussion on what you're talking about and vaccine related. But with the country of Israel, you know, they're already giving vaccines to possibly people that are age 16 and up, and then Palestine is having a hard time getting vaccines. So I think that's a kind of a global discussion question of interest. And I just thought I'd leave that with your listeners and people that might want to call in about that today, Mr. Rob.
Okay, Eric, let's see if other people want to bring it up. You can talk about this or the Super Bowl or the mural to Colin Kaepernick. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Well, the number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits fell to 779,000 last week. And that's down from the week before. It's still historically high. Before the virus erupted in the U.S. in March, weekly applications for jobless aid had never topped 700,000, even during the Great Recession, but it was 779,000 last week, and it was more than 800,000 the week before. Florida's first-time unemployment claims rose sharply for a second straight week as airlines warned of more layoffs because of COVID-19 vaccines that are not being distributed fast enough. For the week ending January 30th, initial Florida claims rose to 71,000, up from 8,000 from an adjusted 62,000 the week before, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Well, a majority of Americans say they have at least some confidence in President Joe Biden and his ability to manage the crisis facing the nation, including the coronavirus pandemic. That's according to a new poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Overall, the survey shows 61% of Americans approve of Biden's handling of his job in his first days in office. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's take a call from John in St. Petersburg. Hey, John, what would you like to say?
Hi. I wanted to draw a comparison to what DeSantis is doing with social media and what Colin Kaepernick was doing with the NFL. The NFL is a for-profit business, and their choice to not, or basically blackball him or not allow him to play, was a business decision, thinking on their end that it was bad for business. Now, if a social media outlet doesn't want to let conservative thought be printed or broadcasted, then aren't they doing the same thing?
I think that's a good point. I mean, the NFL is basically a monopoly for people that love football and want to see it at the professional level. And Facebook and Twitter are basically monopolies for what they do, too. So you're right. I think that's a good comparison.
Anyway, thought occurred to me. Thanks for having me on.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. In Wisconsin, prosecutors there have asked a judge for a new arrest warrant for that Illinois teenager charged with fatally shooting two people during an anti-police protest in Kenosha in August. The suspect, Kyle Rittenhouse, faces two counts of intentional homicide. He was arrested the day after the shootings, but he went free after he posted $2 million in bail. Conservative groups covered that cost. Prosecutors filed a motion Wednesday alleging that Rittenhouse violated his bond after he failed to inform them that he has moved, preventing the court from monitoring his whereabouts. The Wisconsin prosecutors filed the motion yesterday asking the judge to issue an arrest warrant and increase his bail by $200,000. Rittenhouse's attorney says Rittenhouse is in a safe house due to threats. And again, the number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Richard in Tampa. Hey, Richard, what would you like to say?
Hey, good afternoon, Rob. I just want to let you know I'm working at the NFL Experience. I just went down and got my credentials. I got tested. I went through a procedure called Policy Pass. They took my temperature. I went into the convention center, got my credentials to work at the NFL Experience. Also, I'll be working at the Super Bowl. And I'll be working a position enforcing this mask mandate that's going to be in any of these NFL areas where they're going to be enforcing this. So I won't have to, you know, physically enforce it, but I'm going to be requesting, you know, people that are attending this event to make sure they have their mask on, keep their social distancing, and if anything gets out of control, the police and the higher level security will be there to handle it.
And Richard, are they letting people in for free today at the NFL Experience?
I think you need tickets to go online.
I mean, I think that it was always free, but I think that today they're not requiring, I mean, you can sign up today is what I'm getting at.
Yes. Yeah. I heard the same thing this morning, that even though you don't need the physical ticket, there's going to be an overload of people that they're going to be letting in today without a required ticket to get in. So, yes, you are correct to do it that.
All right. Well, Richard, thanks a lot. Congratulations on getting that job.
I got one comment of something I saw on the news this morning, which really perturbed me. It was a community in Naples, and it was this seed and nature store, food grocery store, where this individual is creating a culture where there's a lot of old people in Naples, but everybody inside the store, customers and employees, were not wearing masks. And they had it on you know, the NBC the news this morning. It was a major issue, and, you know, it was setting a very bad example of, especially what's going on in the country today, where we're trying to reverse this thing to do with as many vaccines as we can get out there. And it looks like, you know, we might be getting a hold of the, you know, the bull's horns and turning the tide or the direction in the other way. So,
yeah. And we know that older people are especially at risk too for both catching COVID and dying from COVID.
It was just a terrible example. And people were chiming in from all over the country, you know, where they had lost loved ones and everything. And it's like, how can you be so you know, it says, like, if you have an underlying health condition, you don't have to wear a mask in the store. But still, I mean, you know.
If you have an underlying condition, you can wear a mask, but everybody else goes with maskless.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Richard, thanks a lot. Thanks for that report. All right.
Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. And Bruce writes this, I think the Kansas City Chiefs should keep their nickname and use a grizzled old Navy CPO. Let's see, CPO is Chief Petty Officer. So they should use a grizzled old Chief Petty Officer as their mascot. And the fans in the stands could then chant, lay to you, you swabs. So that's Bruce's point in Reddington Beach, summoning a different meaning for the word Chiefs. All right, thank you for that. Peaceman writes, if you pay 10 grand for a game, you have too much money and you need to pay much more in taxes. Well, as Christopher pointed out, there's people shovel snow for a living. I guess they put all the cash they could assemble into a Super Bowl ticket. So it's read Christopher's story. It's very interesting. Not everybody's a fat cat. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of fat cats there, and I think we're going to try to get a report on that. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Teresa in St. Petersburg. Hi, Teresa. You're on M&F.
Hi. First, go Bucks.
Okay.
And thinking about Israel, yeah, I was wondering when Palestine was going to be, the Palestinian people were going to get a vaccine, but they're getting them from Russia, right? Not that many from Israel?
Yeah, that's what the NPR News just said. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. And also, there's one thing I want to bring up. The Democrats today in the House, I think, are voting to censure that Marjorie Taylor Greene or prevent her from doing any committees or anything.
Right. That vote's coming up today, right?
Yeah. I don't want them to do that because who's to say when the House flips again, which it will, maybe not in 2022, but eventually will, what's to stop the Republicans once they get a majority from voting all the Democrats off all the committees? I mean, is that a possibility?
It is certainly a possibility. You know, Green has raised the bar pretty high, though. I mean, the range of things she's said that are outrageous, it's a pretty high bar. So it'd be interesting to see if a Democrat or an independent would say things as outrageous as that.
No, they wouldn't, but I'm just saying, will that stop them from just deciding, well, we're the majority, we're just going to kick you off committees because we don't like you on them? I mean, could that be even a possibility?
Oh, yeah.
If they don't say anything? Yeah.
It's a possibility.
See, and this is why I don't want the Democrats to do it. I'm just screaming like, no, don't do it. Her district voted her in, and they knew all about her, and I know they're going to do it probably, but I was just hoping that they wouldn't because
We get your point. Thank you, Teresa.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. I was just looking up PolitiFact has a long article today by Daniel Funke about what Marjorie Taylor Greene has actually said. And I'll just read four bullet points from PolitiFact, and this is fresh from this morning because they fact-checked all this. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman from Northwest Florida, was, one, quick to embrace the Stop the Steal narrative disputing Joe Biden's election victory. Two, she promoted the baseless QAnon and Pizzagate conspiracy theories alleging pedophilia and worse among high-profile leaders and celebrities. Three, she's asserted that some of the worst tragedies in U.S. history, including the mass shootings in Las Vegas and Parkland, were planned. And four, she has offered up baseless explanations for the murder of a DNC staffer, Seth Rich, the cause of the California wildfires, and the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And the cause of California wildfires, of course, according to Green, Jewish people who have laser beams from space. So that's what she thinks. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. How do people leave QAnon? And is anybody leaving QAnon? There was a really terrific report on Tuesday morning on CNN by Donnie O'Sullivan. And let's listen to the beginning of this report. Here's a woman in South Carolina who is a fervent QAnon believer. And how did she leave? Let's listen to a little bit of Donnie O'Sullivan's report from CNN.
When President Biden was sworn in.
Hi, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.
I was just crying. I mean, I couldn't stop, like, that ugly cry that you do. It just kept going, and I was like, oh, my gosh, like, I'm seeing the funeral of our country. And instantly, I went into panic mode. I had to call my mom, and I just told her, I was like, we're all going to die. We're going to be owned by China. And I was like, I might have to pull my daughter out of school because they're going to take her. I was scared to death.
Ashley Vanderbilt, a South Carolina mom who says she lost her job early in the pandemic, fell deep down the QAnon conspiracy theory rabbit hole before November's election.
How did you get into this world and go down this rabbit hole?
Well, I started seeing TikToks, and I didn't know that it was conspiracy things. I just thought it was they were telling me something that nobody else knew. So then I would reach out to different friends of mine that were bigger Trump supporters. I would say, you know, I saw this on TikTok. What do you think? And they'd start sending me YouTube videos. They would start sending me different Facebook Live videos. And one thing led to another. I just went down this rabbit hole learning all this stuff. But I mean, what have we heard the last 4 or 5 years? Don't watch the news. Fake news, fake news. I don't watch the news. I don't read newspapers. Like, I don't do anything. I've always been someone that you just tell me what to do and I do it. I grew up being told we were Republicans, so I've always been that straight red ticket.
How do you think that videos like this started showing up in your feed?
Well, originally I was just following like entertainment stuff, but sometime when maybe people started like campaigning, I started liking a lot of Trump posts and things that were anti-Biden, and the algorithm must have just brought that kind of stuff to me.
Right before the inauguration, you didn't believe Biden was really going to get sworn in.
No, I expected a blackout. I expected the TV to go black and nothing to work, and so we wouldn't see anything. The assumption of what would happen would be that most of the Democratic leaders there, quite a few of the Republican leaders, all the Hollywood elite that had attended, they'd all be arrested. The military's going to haul them off. They said that Trump opened back up Guantanamo Bay, and then the military would run the country, put us in martial law because the left come too unhinged and they'd be a danger to us. And then Trump would come back when the government was rebuilt. I know it sounds crazy.
But you believed it.
I did.
And then Biden got sworn in.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel?
I was devastated.
The belief among QAnon supporters that Biden would not be inaugurated was wrong. Ashley Vanderbilt realized she had bought into a conspiracy theory.
Well, I was wrong.
How do you feel now, knowing that you believed all this stuff?
It's weird. I think I spent a lot of time this year isolated from everybody. You know, I'd just been home a lot. I've lost my job last April in 2020, and I was super depressed. And I think in a way I probably lost touch with a little bit of reality and that almost that common sense. And so I'm not so much embarrassed for what I believed, but I mean, I feel foolish. I'm stressed out all the time. So my home life, like with my 4-year-old, I feel like I definitely had a lot less patience with her. There would just be times where I would just snap. I would just get so upset with her. So I've had to apologize to her a lot for being like, I'm sorry for just even getting hateful towards you. Like, it is not you. It is me. I got my own stuff going on.
I mean, you must be happy that for your daughter's sake that you've been able to get out of this.
Yeah, she needs her mom. And I wasn't 100% there like I should have.
Well, that was Ashley Vanderbilt, who's a former QAnon believer who suddenly came out of the trance. She's from South Carolina. The report was done by Donnie O'Sullivan. The report is much longer. That's the opening of the report, and you can see that on the CNN.com website. See the whole thing. Well, the QAnon believers, along with a lot of people on conservative cable TV and conservative talk radio and on the Internet, have pushed this idea that the election was stolen. And President Trump has used that to make a lot of money. And I'm reading from the ABC News, actually from the MSN.com website, rather. Pro-Trump forces have amassed large post-election campaign accounts by exploiting baseless claims of widespread voter fraud to solicit money for former President Trump's election defense fund. But despite the stated purpose, Trump's team has spent a relatively small amount of that money actually fighting the election results. In fact, more than $100 million has gone toward various fundraising expenses and advertising efforts aimed at raising even more money, according to the records. In the 3 weeks after the November election, Trump's team and the Republican National Committee together raised $207 million by claiming election fraud and seeking support from the public to fight the 2020 results, in which Democrat Joe Biden won over Donald Trump by more than 7 million votes. And even as Trump's election challenges faltered, an additional $80 million poured into their accounts, according to the latest campaign disclosure reports filed with the Federal Election Commission. In the weeks following the election, the Trump campaign and the RNC bombarded their supporters with more than 600 emails declaring that the election was stolen and asking for donations for an election defense fund. The bulk of Trump's post-election efforts targeted small-dollar donors. But of the more than $280 million raised, $280 million raised since the November 3rd election, the Trump campaign and the RNC, which were the main forces behind Trump's post-election legal challenges, reported spending only about $13 million on legal expenses, according to filings with the FEC. And I'm reading this from MSN.com. The headline is, How Trump RNC Raised Hundreds of Millions of Dollars Pushing Baseless Election Fraud Claims. So the big lie of the stolen election is being used right now to raise a huge amount of money by Donald Trump and the RNC. We don't know what they're going to use that money for, but that story is out there. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And when you send your email, sign it. Clark says, I recommend to the caller, Rick, that he listen to True Talk tomorrow at 10. I'm sure they'll be discussing the Palestine-Israel vaccine distribution issue, writes Clark. Yeah, I'm sure Ahmed and Summer will do that. Let's go to some callers. Let's go to Tim in Tampa. Hey, Tim, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, how you doing, Rob?
I'm
Two
good.
Quick points. One about the Trump is that his problems are just beginning because these 70-some million people, when they realize they were conned, his problems will just get started. Trust me.
When do you think they're going to wake up? When do you think they're going to figure that out? Like that woman Ashley.
Exactly. It's going to be soon. Trust me. But the second part is about the Super Bowl. And you look at the money that the NFL makes at the Super Bowl with the tickets and all this other stuff. I had a good friend of mine, come from New Orleans when they had the Super Bowl here a couple years ago. And he used his own money. He actually stayed with me. So I got to talking with this guy. He performs during the halftime show. And that was his fifth time performing during the halftime show. He travels around the country, wherever they're having the Super Bowl, and he performs. He's all that group of people on the field. So I said, oh, man, that's great. So you get to see watch the game, man, you perform, you get to watch the game. He said, no, they usher us out of the stadium after the halftime show.
Oh, no.
So I said, wait a minute. You spend your own money to come here. You spend your own time, food, and everything else to prepare and practice for the halftime show, and they don't even let you watch the game? He says, no. And I'm looking at this dude. I said, are you crazy?
Is he coming back this year?
I don't know. Yeah. I haven't talked to him. I hadn't been able to reach him. But my point is, what is wrong with us when we allow to get exploited by an organization that makes billions of dollars a year, and they can't even pay these people? It's sad.
That's really sad. All right, Tim. Thanks for pointing that out. All right. Great to hear from you, Tim. Let's go to Mike in Sarasota. Mike, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Yes. Speaking of conspiracy theories, I'd like to offer some evidence to shed light on one. And this gets back to the January 6th events. Gordon Sund, who was the chief of the Capitol Police, read the situation correctly. He read it as a threat, and he appealed to the sergeants at arms of the House and the Senate, and then there's actually a third person on the committee, the House architect, Capitol architect, excuse me, and asked for National Guard help. Now, they did not read the situation correctly, and they said, well, no, this is not much of a threat, so they turned it down. So that's the reason the National Guard was not available on January 6th.
And Mike, what's your source? I mean, if you're in Sarasota, do you live in Washington, or what's your source on this? Have you talked to Sund? Or
my source is the Sarasota Herald Tribune.
Okay.
And NBC News. That this is exactly what they reported. Now, I have another source which sheds light on it, and that's the recent reports, the follow-up reports from the Washington Post and the New York Times. And they said that three-person committee, and remember, one of them was the sergeant at arms of the House, which he reports to Nancy Pelosi. But one of the things that informed their thinking was that they had received, not them personally, but in general, the authorities had received so much criticism because they had called the National Guard out on in the Black Lives Matter protest, and they'd received this criticism from Black Lives Matter because they'd brought the National Guard to protest, that they decided, well, we don't want to experience that criticism again. The optics, and that's a direct quote, are so bad, we don't want to have the National Guard at another political protest. So ironically, one of the reasons that the National Guard was not there was because of the protests from the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mike, I think we've got to be careful because we don't know what kind of intelligence. Every time something happens, there's intelligence or there's information shared with law enforcement officers. So you and I are not privy, and I don't think NBC News right now is privy to what kind of intelligence was given ahead of time. You may have drawn that conclusion, but I think it's too soon to draw that conclusion. I think what we need is a national commission to study why was security so bad on that day, and put people under oath, testify, look at the documents, look at what kind of intelligence they gathered ahead of time. And I think we'll get close to the truth with that. I would be a little hesitant to draw conclusions based on, I mean, I like the Sarasota Herald Tribune. I think NBC is pretty trustworthy. But let's not jump to conclusions. Let's demand that there be a national commission that puts people under oath and they testify and we get to the bottom of it, okay?
Well, I think that, you know, one thing we need to realize, and I agree with you, yes, a commission would be a good idea, and they would probably be more authoritative than the Washington Post and the New York Times and their follow-ups. But I think the key thing here is not really that important what the actual facts were or what you think, what I think. The key thing is what was in the minds of these decision-makers at the time.
I disagree. It is important what the facts were, and I don't have an opinion about it, but it is important what the facts were, and we got to get to the bottom of it. And you're welcome to have an opinion ahead of time, but let's demand that there be a thorough investigation, and let's find out what they knew ahead of time. How angry was this crowd that was arriving on the mall on January 6th? Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for your great call. Let's go to Ted in Ellenton. Ted, you're on. What would you like to say?
Rob, as Ron White said, the comedian, you can't pick stupid.
Who are you referring to today?
Where the Republicans are. They're in denial, and you can't pick stupid.
All right. Ted, thanks a lot. Thank you. All right, let's go to Mike and Brandon. Mike, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. with it, you mentioned about the kid who shot those people. I believe that $2 million bond. I thought one of those actors, like Scott Baio or someone, paid for that. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was one of the child actors from the 1970s, and he gave a substantial amount of money. And I'll think of his name in a little bit. And I'm sure our listeners know. There's listeners who that's clicking with right now. It was a white guy who was a cuddly kid from the 1970s. Is it Ricky Schroeder? Anyway, who knows why he went off the deep end? I'll look it up.
Yeah, that's fine, because apparently the $2 million bond that they're asking now, they want the family to come up with that.
Yeah, instead of the public. I mean, there was money pouring in. It wasn't just this Hollywood actor. It was money from other people, too, that was pouring in to help this guy, Kyle Rittenhouse. So.
Hey, the other question I have for you is this. Would have been good, the gentleman that you were talking to about the buck and the tickets and whatnot. Now, being that those health workers were given, over 7,000 health workers were given tickets, are they free to sell them?
I meant to ask that, and I dropped it. I don't know. I don't know.
The optics of that, of course, wouldn't be quite right. But, hey, if you give a gift, it's a gift.
Well, and think of these frontline workers who've been working so hard, and, maybe they need the money more than they need to, you get a pretty good seat in the house these days watching a football with all the instant replays when you're at home. So I can see somebody taking that ticket and turning it around for $11,000 or $20,000 or whatever they can get for it.
You know that. You know that. Thank you, as always, my friend.
Okay, Mike. Thank you. Thank you. We got an open line, 813-239-9663. It was Ricky Schroeder who helped to bail out Kyle Rittenhouse. Just looked it up. There's a Hollywood actor that likes people on the far right. And let's see. The Silver Spoons and NYPD Blue Star put up hundreds of thousands of dollars towards Rittenhouse's $2 million bail. And I'm quoting that from the Los Angeles Times. Let's go back to the phones. You're listening to 88.5 FM, and we're talking about things in the news. Greg writes, it's not conservative thought that social platforms are censoring. It's disinformation or intentional lies used to gaslight people, unless conservative thought equals lies, writes Greg. Greg, thanks a lot. And that is, I think that's a really good statement. And that I did bring that up yesterday. I probably misspoke today, but thank you very much. Devin Lutz writes, always love your shows, but your earlier caller who said that the NFL's lock on the Super Bowl tickets so that only the wealthy could afford them was the same thing as social media businesses like Facebook and Twitter restricting conservative messages on their platform. Devin Lutz writes, Facebook and Twitter are not restricting conservative messages on their platforms, contrary to the false claim that many are making. They are clamping down on disinformation and pro-violence messages. And so there's two people correcting me, and thank you. I made that point yesterday, didn't make it clear enough today, and thank you for straightening me out. I really appreciate it. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Gino in Tampa. Hey, Gino, you're on M&F. What's up?
I just wanted to say something that's similar to the guy you had on earlier about the dancer on halftime shows. It kind of reminds me of Amazon keeping the tips from those drivers. Amazon is a $1.7 trillion business, but they decided to keep tips from the drivers? That's greed.
Yeah, you know, and it was interesting that that story broke the same day that Jeff Bezos announced his retirement from.
Yes.
And so the story, which is really important, was blown out of the water by the fact that Jeff Bezos got so much press about his retirement. But yes, Amazon was stealing money from its own drivers. How dare they?
$1.7 trillion business. That's amazing. And they wanted to keep good pennies.
Yeah, for somebody that's working for, less than $20 an hour, they're going to steal money from the poor driver. I mean, even if you're making $20 an hour, that's only $40,000 a year. Who can get by on $40,000 a year?
Right.
All right, Gino, thanks. I appreciate that. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, first of all, Rob, we can compare the progressive and even the liberal Biden Democrats to the Trump GOP by looking at the different reactions between two elections, one that was certainly stolen from Al Gore in 2000, only 538 votes, and that was later found out that Gore won that election. So if anybody had an impetus and a legitimate right to an armed insurgency to take the presidency, it was Al Gore and his followers. And as anyone noticed, the Democrats and Al Gore didn't stage an armed insurrection to take back the presidency that was stolen from Gore by the Supreme Court, Jeb Bush, and Catherine Harris. So that's how we in the progressive and Democratic communities handle an election disappointment based on election theft. The Republicans, in this case, had an election that was fairly decided. Trump lost by a wide margin, and look what they did. Number two, I don't know if you've had him on your program, but there's an intelligence analyst and author named Malcolm Nance. And he explains that we do have a counterinsurgency in this country. We have a fifth column. We have a new Confederate army. And it includes Amon Bundy and all of those Western gun nut people that take over wildlife refuges. It includes the people that run grocery stores and openly defy mask mandates. It includes the Capitol rioters. It includes Marjorie Taylor Greene, Holly, Cruz, etc. It's sad for us to realize that we are still in a kind of civil war. but that the right-wingers, the fascists, the Trump lovers, the QAnon cultists are the ones fighting the war violently. Us progressives and liberals are sitting back thinking that good sense, manners, and decency, as well as real patriotism, will prevail. It might not, and we have to understand that we are being threatened from within. And I haven't even mentioned that Putin has had a big influence. Let's put it this way. If Putin had really wanted to have a president or a foreign agent sabotage this country, he couldn't have done much better than Donald Trump. And thank you for your great show and station.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. Those are all topics that we've mentioned. And I think, you know, if you're a longtime listener to WMNF, you know that in the 80s, when the KKK and Christian identity groups were organizing around here, we had stories about it. Certainly after the Oklahoma City bombing, we had stories about the danger of the far right. And we'll continue to cover it, especially on the weekday programs here on WMNF. So thank you, Gary, for your compliment. Susan writes, I would like to say that not wearing a mask is like driving drunk. You might make it home safely. You might hit somebody and they don't die. And you don't die. Or you could kill someone. So wear a mask. Writes Susan. Let's go back to the phones, and it looks like Dave in Clearwater has been holding the longest. Dave, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, just a comment about the Super Bowl tickets. My daughter is a nurse, and she was fortunate to get one, and she said they're totally non-transferable. You have to show ID at the gate.
You got to pick it up at the gate, so you can't sell it on the
black
market.
Yeah, you can't. Doing it, and so
they got you. Okay.
I kind of figured that, but she's pretty happy she's going.
Yeah. It'll be fun to go to for her. Thanks a lot, Dave. Thank you for that. Okay. I'm glad you straightened that out too. Let's go to Walter in Sarasota. Hey, Walter, you're on WMNF.
Hey, love your show, absolutely, and I'm so glad the progressive movement is starting to really get its roots in. And Biden right now, he's really starting to embrace and not be as moderate as he was in the past, because he tried that and the Republicans have failed on it. My wife, though, she used to vote Republican. She voted for Biden this time because of all the chaos, and I'm definitely more progressive. But her question is this. She works for $19 an hour at a call center, and she is so worried that if the minimum wage goes up to 15 she says, you know, she'll lose her job. She manages a call center with 50 people, and they said they will just replace them and they're going to start to automate everything. And so this is why she's against it. And she asked me to actually bring this up on the show. So I just wanted to get a reaction on why. I know why, but I'd like to hear why you think that $15 would be good, as it needs to be for all the people out there that are struggling.
Well, Walter, I have a minute left, so it's going to be hard to cover. But let me just say this. A few years ago, the Florida voters raised the minimum wage, so it was higher than the national minimum wage. And I had the Chamber of Commerce guy on, Mark Wilson from Tallahassee, on this show. And Mark said, we're going to lose millions of jobs, and a lot of people are going to be laid off. And so when Florida voters raised the minimum wage about a dollar more than the national average, we didn't lose jobs. In fact, we had one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country, even though we had a higher minimum wage than any other southern state. So what I would say to your wife is that was the prediction last time, that people would lose their jobs. She may be right, but my bet, and I'll bet your wife. What can I bet over the radio? I'll bet her an hour of minimum wage at $15 an hour. That we won't lose jobs. That there's still going to be heavy demand for everything. I hope they don't outsource. I mean, I think it says a lot about a company that's willing to outsource from the U.S. if they don't want to pay their workers a living wage. But that's another story. I promise we'll talk more about it. This isn't the last we'll talk about, because it's going to be big in Tallahassee in March. So, Walter, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. I promise.
Your great work.
Thank you. We won't ignore the story. I'm sorry to give it such short shrift today. Hey, stay tuned for The Midpoint program coming up next here on 88.5 FM. Anna Eskamani, one of the most interesting Florida legislators, will be on in the next hour, and she always says things that are worth hearing. Call us at 813-238-8001. Record your comment about this show on extension 115.